Where else could you go and see a $10 bill pasted to the bulletin board and nobody pick it up? Found in laundry. I had my laundry done. And even though it was just underwear, maybe. It says something. It says something about the quality of us, doesn't it? It says something about the integrity. It says something about the way we hold the world. I think it's there's kind of a precious waving that that $10 bill gives us as we pass. I want to speak tonight about the evolution of insight practice. And I'm doing this very deliberately at the end of the retreat so that people won't start judging their practice in terms of that evolutionary cycle. And it's not meant at all to be a thought of as a progression of I'm here and I've got to get somewhere else. It's more, it's a quieting. It's a quieting. This evolution follows a quieting, a phase of quietude. Now, some evolutionary cycles in spiritual practice have a definite progression. And in fact, the progression of insight is a progression from one experience to another. And some have a deepening of understanding, like the ox herding pictures in Zen, where different facets of that, of those pictures represent a different relationships to stillness, what we've been talking about on this particular retreat. But I want to look at how the practice itself, how the practice starts speaking to us differently, dependent upon our different levels of quietude. And actually, if you look at and listen to these different phases, you'll find that through the course of this retreat, you quite possibly had every one of those phases. And if you look at where you are in terms of your life with the practice, perhaps you can resonate with one of those phases predominantly. It's not to get over that phase in order to get to the next phase. It's to quiet, to settle into that phase, to relax into that phase. And then there's another floor that you fall onto. So that's very important before I start talking about this, because I am not someone who speaks lightly about phases of practice, because it catches everyone's ear, especially in this culture when we have so much ambition in striving towards that end. But I think it's helpful in getting a sense of the landscape of the practice. Because you know, in the beginning you can feel like, is this it? Is there anything else here? I mean, what is this all about? Am I just sitting here ruminating on how difficult it is? Is there something else that's going to show itself here, you know? And I think it's very helpful. And also I think it's helpful is to where we focus our efforts when we are in a particular phase. Because very easily, those phases can have a component of ignorance that captures our efforts in a completely opposite direction than where we should be applying them. So I'm hoping that as I go through these different phases, you'll perhaps hear a tone of correction so that we can deepen and quiet and come to yet a stiller point within us. You see, as a preliminary understanding, I think we all have to understand that this practice, or any spirituality, is about understanding, self-understanding, understanding our mind. It's not about doing something with it. It's about the understanding of it. And when you're trying to understand something, what is required? Well, we have to be quiet, or we're never going to create the inward environment to be able to understand. And we can't opinionate. We can't move into a subject with our preset judgment of how this thing is going to turn out, or we'll never be available to what it really is. So if you let the word understanding take you in to what it means in order to understand, you'll see why we emphasize and stress the different practice verbs that we do, like relaxing, allowing, etc. So what's the first phase? I call it inflated enthusiasm. The stage one, phase one, not stage one, phase one is inflated enthusiasm. I particularly appreciate to see people when they first arrive. And they've offered an extended effort to get here. They've gone through a lot of painstaking travel often. There's a kind of excitement about arriving and settling into the room and the initial social interactions and the kind of like opening baseball season. Something like that. And there's often a heightened expectation of what this practice is going, where this weekend is going to happen. And, you know, it happens very subtly to the more experienced practitioner as well as to the beginner. We often carry an idea or remembrance of the previous retreat, and we enter this retreat with an expectation of even more profound or further advanced insight or whatever, however we hold it. But it's often accompanies that initial landing, that initial thing, and the expectation that we have with the practice. The emphasis on this stage is on the mechanics of the practice and making the mechanics so that we can settle down, get over these first couple of days and settle into, get it going, you know. So, and we have to get all the gear shifts working right. We have to get our samadhi up to, you know, we gotta quiet. We got all these projects that were going on. And we often might have specific ideas of how this whole thing is going to turn out for us. And somebody told us of something that happened to them on a retreat, and we have an idea that that's what meditation is about. And so we come in with this idea that meditation is going to lead to the same product that we perceived in this other person. And so when we have that kind of orientation to the meditation focus, we can miss the forest for the trees. We don't see the beauty of the landscape as it develops because we're looking for just that one experience to validate our practice. And that can be very, very difficult because there's so much pressure at this time on the practice to work, to perform. It's unrealistic. Putting tremendous weight on this thing called meditation and the mechanics thereof. And little changes do occur. It's not as if those changes don't occur, but in comparison to some of the deeper qualities of change, these are often superficial changes. We find ourselves settling in a little more. We find ourselves a little quieter. We find ourselves oriented in space and time to where we actually are rather than constantly fighting that orientation. And somehow, through it all, there is a general movement towards an alignment with something. But the expectations that aren't being met are often more discouraging to us than what the changes that are being met. And at this point, the whole thing is very precariously purged because our old habits are ready to kick in, and we're ready to undermine whatever changes might be there with our very strong sense of self-doubt and collapse the whole tent and just leave the premise entirely. Which is why most of us in that first day or so go through this inward packing of our bags. And we think, my God, what? How did I ever get here? And how can I escape without being seen? And is it possible to get my money back? You know, this is a trap. This is a trap, man. This is a trap. I'm gonna. In this practice, in this phase, what needs to be stressed is that is the sitting itself, is the sitting and the walking, the form, the technique, just the adherence to that, just do it, and believe it or not, most of us end up staying, which is really amazing to me, as hard as it is, that you have that kind of dedication of purpose and willingness to try. In fact, it's one of the things that ignite my own appreciation, is to see people moving through this first stage. It's because nothing's being seen, really nothing of any significance. You're running totally on blind faith here. It's like, well, if he says so. So, which takes us into the second phase, the deeper, the quieting. See, okay, after sitting, walking, okay, so after that first outbreak of enthusiasm, then there's this, then I often say it's like entering a room of one-way mirrors, the reflection of which reflect inward. And you walk into the room the first day with a great deal of enthusiasm of just being in there. And then on this second phase, you actually look up and see the reflection in the mirror. And it's what I call the stage of self-repulsion. It's like, oh my God. Someone once said, the truth will liberate you, but you'll become miserable first. And it has that sense. When you look up and see the reflective gaze, is what the meditation is supposed to be doing, is showing our face to us, to show us what it is, that the patterns that we run on. And there's so much wiggling that goes on in that early adjustment to those images, a struggle. And when I say a quiet period and now we're going to do metta, May I be kind to myself. It can't let those words in, you know, because of the self-perception, of the self repulsion. And I think to a person, I don't know very many people who can bypass this phase. It's another endearing phase. But the beauty of it, the beauty of a one-way mirror, is that if you get close enough to it, yes, you see the reflection, but you also see through the mirror. And so, in this phase, but we're not that close yet. It's just the images, and we see our selfishness, we see our anger, we see our grief. And not only that, but we see with our idealism, which is continuing through this phase, there is a sense of the hurt, the pain of caring. The pain of caring. You know the pain of caring? Where the world, becomes a little mistrustful because of how out of whack it is according to what the heart's caring says. And how hurtful everything is in the world. And I'm supposed to live out there? Those are questions like that we hear often. How can I ever include this president or that president in my heart? I'm sorry, I'm just... See, the idealism and the struggle is there, the mistrust. We had a Northwest Dharma, which is sort of the umbrella organization in Seattle, doesn't represent any one Buddhist group. It represents all of the different sanghas in the area. And a member of a Seattle Insight Sangha wanted to apply for the director of that organization. And I didn't want her to do it. She was relatively young in the practice, and I knew that her idealism would come crashing down. But she insisted, and so she did, against my better judgment. And to see the innocence and enthusiasm when she entered that job, and 1 year later when she left it and left the practice too. And I haven't seen her since. This isn't small things. We are very vulnerable in this phase for our idealism to come cracking open.